This is a 5 train. The next stop is Wall Street.
Herzlich willkommen zu Wall Street Weekly, dem Börsenpodcast aus New York. Ich bin Sophie Schimanski und ich freue mich, dass Sie mit dabei sind. Es ist offensichtlich, mit der Pandemie im globalen Zentrum der Aufmerksamkeit gibt es gerade nicht viel Grund zum Optimismus für die Realwirtschaft. Ökonomen sehen die Zukunft der Weltwirtschaft eher düster. Der Internationale Währungsfonds, der IWF, hat im Juni seine Prognose für die Entwicklung der Weltwirtschaft im laufenden Jahr erneut gesenkt. Zudem rechnet er damit, dass diese Entwicklung im Folgejahr nicht ausgeglichen werden kann. Davon unbeeindruckt scheint der Aktienmarkt. Der macht seit Monaten, was er will. Gute Stimmung dort, selbst wenn die Unternehmen in ihren Berichtsergebnissen zeigen, wie tief das Loch ist, das die Pandemie in die Kassen reißt. Die Anleger scheinen Meister der Verdrängung. Denken Sie mal zurück an die vergangene Berichtssaison. Als Unternehmen ihr schlechtestes Quartal seit der Finanzkrise meldeten. Nur, die Aktien erholten sich so stark, dass 5 Billionen Dollar zu den Aktienkursen hinzugefügt wurden. Über all das spreche ich heute mit zwei Investmentstrategen, die unterschiedlicher Meinung sind. Jeff Sout von Capital Wealth Planning hat für Aufsehen gesorgt mit der sehr überzeugten Aussage, wir stünden kurz vor einem Raketenstart der Kurse. Ziel 4000 Punkte Landung innerhalb der nächsten 12 Monate oder 30% plus für den S&P 500. Auf der anderen Seite der Analyst Mark Ostwald von ADM Investor Service in London. Er sagt, die 4000 Punkte sind möglich, aber nur, weil der Aktienmarkt jeglichen Bezug zur Realwirtschaft verloren hat. Die nächsten Quartalsbilanzen stehen an. Wie tief sind die Risse durch Corona inzwischen, ist die große Frage. Analysten erwarten einen Rückgang der Gewinne der im S&P 500 gelisteten Unternehmen von 44%. Das wäre der größte Rückgang seit der Finanzkrise 2008. 4 von 5 S&P 500 gelisteten Unternehmen haben keine Guidance, also keinen Ausblick bislang gegeben. So unberechenbar scheint ihnen die Zukunft zu sein. Deswegen tappen die Anleger noch mehr im Dunkeln. Hören wir mal, was Art Hogan, Stratege bei National Securities, dazu auf CNBC gesagt hat.
The second quarter or first quarter is going to look particularly bad because we were involved with COVID-19 for the entirety of the second quarter. It really thrust into the economic activity in the second quarter. We had one or two good months in the first quarter, so sequentially we're going to look bad enough. But right now, after the first quarter earnings, everybody cut their guidance. So every estimate that's out there right now is literally a best guess. It's certainly not something that anybody has a great deal of confidence in. So it's hard to know just how bad this is going to get.
Die Fluggesellschaften sind besonders getroffen. United Airlines hat vor einigen Tagen erst gesagt, dass sie möglicherweise 36.000 neue Mitarbeiter entlassen müssen. Die wenigen Sektoren, von denen Analysten glaubten, sie würden weniger hart getroffen werden, wackeln ebenfalls. Zum Beispiel der Tech-Sektor. Das ist eine Entwicklung, die wir bereits nach der ersten Berichtssaison dieses Jahr gesehen haben. Nachdem die Unternehmen erst vom neuen Freizeitverhalten der vielen Menschen auf der Couch profitiert haben, hat die Kontroverse rund um die Black Lives Matter-Bewegung und Rassismus zumindest den großen Tech-Giganten wie Google, Facebook und Twitter geschadet. Sie haben einige Werbekunden verloren. Das besorgt den Investmentstrategen Mark Ostwald.
All because of the Black Lives Matter issue, we are seeing companies pulling advertising from a lot of those key names like Google, like Facebook, like Twitter, to make a point, fair enough, but it's bad for revenues going forward. In the one sector, I was thinking, oh, well, that'll be good news. That, you know, that is a permanent good news story. And you're wondering, like, these people were basically meant to be the one thing which was immutable. This is sort of what worries me, because if you're looking at that going forward and saying, even that's not going to be fantastic, where's this all going to go in the longer run?
Das wissen wir sicher in etwa 6 Wochen, wenn alle Unternehmen ihre Berichte abgeliefert haben. Nur, wenn es so weitergeht an den Aktienmärkten wie bislang, haben die Unternehmen trotzdem nichts zu befürchten von den Anlegern. Bislang hat die Anleger nichts davon abgehalten, kräftig zuzuschlagen bei den Aktien. Nie hatte die Entwicklung in der Realwirtschaft weniger zu tun mit den Aktienkursen der betroffenen Unternehmen. Die Arbeitslosigkeit in den USA wird möglicherweise noch den Höchststand von rund 25% während der Weltwirtschaftskrise von 1933 übertreffen. Das Bruttoinlandsprodukt der USA wird im zweiten Quartal voraussichtlich um bis zu 60% auf Jahresbasis schrumpfen. Mehr als in der Zeit der Depression. Die Unternehmen an den Börsen sind derweil Rekordsummen wert. Indizes erreichten teilweise neue Rekordwerte. Erst vergangene Woche hatte der Tech-Index Nasdaq Composite, der die Aktienkurse von etwa 3000 an der Tech-Börse gelisteten Unternehmen darstellt, ein neues Allzeithoch erreicht. Ebenso die Einzelaktien von Apple und Amazon. Der Kontrast war noch nie größer. Das sagt auch Stratege Mark Ostwald.
I don't think it's ever been bigger. The disconnect now, we've had bubbles before, whether it's 29, whether it's tech boom. I would actually be worried about most of all right now is when I'm looking at the valuation of whatever the extended FANG now. We're talking about the valuation of those eight, I think it's eight stocks, as being something like $6.1 trillion. That's basically the combined GDP of Japan and Italy.
Wir sehen gerade, die Krise in der Realwirtschaft führt nicht zu einer an den Aktienmärkten. Eine wichtige Rolle spielt natürlich die Notenbank. Die Federal Reserve Bank hat Staatsanleihen und Unternehmensanleihen gekauft und so Billionen von Dollar in die Finanzmärkte und in die Realwirtschaft gepumpt. Hinzu kommen die niedrigen Zinsen. Damit sind Anleihen so wertlos geworden, dass Anleger nicht mehr viel anderes übrig bleibt als Aktien. Der Investmentstratege Edward Yardini, auch ein Wall Street-Veteran, sagte vor einigen Tagen auf CNBC das hier.
I think the Fed has just poured in so much liquidity into the market. By March 23rd, they came in and did QE forever, saying they would just buy treasuries and mortgage-backed securities open-ended. And they basically started a program that I called No Asset Left Behind. They said that they were going to buy corporate bonds, including some of the lowest grade, investment grade bonds that had turned into junk. And that created a tremendous pressure to rebalance out of bonds and into stocks. There's a potential for something that might look like 1999 all over again. Remember that Prince song about partying like it's 1999, and the market certainly has that potential.
Es ist kein Ende in Sicht. Die Fed bleibt allzeit bereit. Das bestätigte auch Richard Clarida, Vizechef der Notenbank, auf CNN.
When it comes to the size of our balance sheet, we make those decisions. There's no limit to how much we can purchase in terms of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. These programs are meant to encourage and support the flow of credit to households and businesses in the economy, and those will remain in place as long as they're needed. So there's more that we can do, and there's more that we will do if we have to do it.
Die Regierung gewährt Amerikanern und Unternehmen also zusätzlich billionenschwere direkte wirtschaftliche Unterstützung. Doch es ist auch die Tatsache, dass es aufgrund niedriger Zinsen eigentlich keine Alternative zu Aktien gibt. Alles in allem, entscheidend sind die Aktivitäten der Notenbank für die aktuelle Situation, sagt Mark Ostwald.
The Fed balance sheet is now 7 trillion. There are plenty of people speculating it might get to 10 trillion. And it's that sheer weight of money, which I think is driving all of this. And that's why it is so divorced from the real economy. The real tester is, you know, when we start getting distinctions about, okay, at some point, governments are going to have to roll back all these furlough support systems because they can't afford them. They're the right thing to do, in the circumstance, but they're extraordinarily expensive.
Optimistischer ist der Jeff Sout von Capital Wealth Planning. Vielleicht ist es seine Erfahrung, vielleicht ist es der Tomatensaft, den er vor unserem Interview getrunken hat. Fakt ist, düster wird es nicht, sagt er. Good morning, Jeff. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
It's my pleasure.
So, it feels like there are many things to be worried about right now in this world, in the economy, maybe in the stock market. But you do not seem to be so worried. Is that right?
That's right. It's because I've seen this act before, and I've been observing markets with my now deceased father for 56 years, and I've been in this business almost 50 years. So I've seen a lot of cycles. I don't think it's any different this time. The year began with the S&P changing hands around 3,200, and it currently changes hands around 3,200. So to the casual observer, it would appear that not much has happened, but nothing could be further from the truth.
What is your prediction? You know, the one that has gained a lot of attention. I'm certain you know which one I'm talking about.
Well, I said on CNBC and Fox on Monday that I thought 12 months from now, the S&P would be at 4,000. And the anchors on both shows were dumbfounded. They were actually lost for an answer.
Yeah, I think the stock market's more right about the economy than any economist I know. You live in New York City. Go to the restaurants. Restaurants are full. The restaurants down here in St. Pete are full. I think the economy is going to do a lot better than people expect. There's what, $5 trillion in money market funds on the sidelines? So I think we've got years left ahead of us on the upside.
All right. And
I think it has gained a lot of attention because it would be something like 30% within the next 12 months. And what is remarkable to me is that when you look at the economy, I mean, Corona, I think it's fair to say it's far from being over. We're kind of not only waiting for a second wave, we're actually seeing rising cases and more shutdowns again and longer shutdowns. I think there's a lot of things that are still being really difficult, at least for the economy. Maybe it doesn't matter for the stock market. Maybe that is the point.
Yeah, you know, we're in a secular bull market. And the problem is there aren't many people left around that have been in the business long enough that have seen a secular bull market. I mean, 1949 to 1966 was a secular bull market. 1982 to 2000 was a secular bull market. Within those two points, there were a bunch of 30 and 40% declines, but it didn't end the secular bull market.
Can you quickly explain what a secular bull market is for my audience?
Yeah, secular bull markets tend to last 15 or 20 years, and they're not deterred. Like, we just had a 37% pullback, and a bunch of stock market pundits came out and said, well, that was a bear market. Well, it's not a bear market. I don't know where the sense that 20+% up or down represents bull and bear markets. It's patently untrue. Secular bull markets last 15 to 20 years, and they are not stopped by a 20, 30, even a 40% pullback. I mean, in the 1982 to 2000 secular bull market, you lost 22.6% of the equity value in a day on October 10th of 1987 in the crash. But the secular bull market went on for another 13 years.
I think you can definitely make the argument that our economy is at least in trouble. It is not as strong as it maybe was last year around that time for a very obvious reason. What I find interesting is that maybe it doesn't matter to investors because we have mechanisms in place. Let it be monetary policy, let it be fiscal policy, where investors know that the worst is not going to come, if you know what I mean. Do you see that disconnect between the economy and the stock market? Is that maybe one reason why you're so optimistic?
In all my years of doing this, when the economists were talking about recessions and yet the stock market was going up, the stock market was right. And the economists were wrong. And the stock market is telling you that we're going to get by this pandemic virus and the economy is going to be just fine. Retail investors are sitting with $5 trillion in money market funds. That's not the way secular bull markets end. And to the well-prepared investor, and if you listen to the message of the market, nobody can consistently time the market. But if you listen to the message of the market, you sure as heck can decide if you want to be playing hard or not playing so hard. And I'm pretty good at that because I've been doing it a long time. I've seen bull markets before, and we're in a secular bull market. And based on historic precedent, you ought to have at least another 4 to 9 years in this thing, and maybe longer.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me get back to something you said. You said that if there is a disconnect happening, in the past, the stock market usually was right and the economists were wrong. You do see a disconnect. You do see that the economy is maybe telling a different narrative than the stock market. And I would like to know where this disconnect is coming from.
It's coming from economists that don't understand the equity markets, and they're skiing down the hill, looking at the tips of their skis rather than looking, you know, 20, 30 yards ahead, which is what you need to do. And I think the economy is going to come back. I think it's going to come back stronger than most people think. And I'm pretty sure that's what the stock market is sensing, which is, you know, why we've been trading higher.
But I mean, the economists are not saying anything about the stock market. They're just making predictions. The market or analysts are reacting to that. And I mean, we're going to know in a few weeks. We're going to have the earnings coming up. And most people are pretty pessimistic when it comes to those earnings. And those earnings are going to be numbers from the past and fundamentals and numbers about how bad it has actually been. So it's going to give a really good picture of how much these companies have suffered from the pandemic. But you still don't expect stocks to react to that? Or do you think these reports just don't show the whole picture?
I agree that the upcoming earnings are not going to be pretty. But I think that's going to be a trough in the earnings picture. And I think you're going to see a trough in the economy. And I think that's what the stock market is telling you, that we're going to get through this. It's not going to be a disaster. And going forward, I mean, the stock market is 6 to 9 months looking forward. And the stock market is telling you that 6 to 9 months from now, earnings are going to be doing pretty well. The economy is going to be doing pretty well. And people are just woefully underinvested in the equity markets. So, you know, I'll trust the equity markets over the economists any day of the week.
So do you expect the stocks to react to these earnings at all? Do you think they're going to react in the short term?
Well, after being pretty bullish for a while, I turned cautious in early to mid-June of this year, just because of the points that you are making. And I want to get through this earnings season and see how stocks react. Could the markets pull back from here? Yeah, sure they could. But it's within the construct of a secular bull market. And I think that, you know, if we do get a pullback, I don't think it's going to be much of a pullback.
But one point that you're making is that people who pulled out money out of the market still kind of have it sitting on the sidelines because where else to put it? So at one point, this money has to go back into the markets, right?
That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's probably also the Fed pumping liquidity into the market, like kind of like a safety net.
Well, the Fed has rescued the market a number of times over the past 4, 5, 6 years. And if you take Chairman Powell at his word, he's willing to do it, you know, a few more times. So you've got the wind at your back with the Fed. You're going to get an earnings trough with these upcoming earnings. You're going to get a trough in the economy. And 6 to 9 months from now, we're going to be just in fine shape.
Oh, so that kind of makes me wonder if you expect more guidance from companies, because we haven't seen any guidance from like 4 out of 5 S&P 500 companies. And since the market is trading so much on hope and on maybe even more than hope, on knowing that things are going to be fine.
I don't think you're going to see earnings guidance come back anytime soon. But I don't think it matters because I think earnings 6 to 9 months from now are going to be just fine.
Are there certain sectors that you are worried about maybe a little bit more, or does it also not make a difference?
My two favorite sectors right here are the two sectors that everybody else hates, the financials and energy. Both of those sectors historically are very cheap on the numbers. And my father used to tell me that good things tend to happen to cheap stocks. So I have been buying the Master Limited Partnerships because they are as cheap as they have been in 25 years. And you've got hard assets. I mean, the midstream Master Limited Partnerships are the ones that own the pipelines in this country. And they have long-term contracts with people like Chevron and Exxon. And, you know, you can't run the country without the liquids flowing through the pipelines. In the financials, I actually have a fairly decent position in Raymond James stock because I worked there for 22 years up until a couple years ago when I kind of semi-retired. So, yeah, I like the two out-of-favor industries right here. I like the financials and I like energy.
So as kind of like to sum it up, do you think that it is the right way to say investors might almost like ignore earnings?
Yeah, I know professional investors are going to ignore the upcoming earnings. I mean, the stock market might try and pull back because you're right. The earnings are going to be ugly. There's any doubt about it. The virus has impacted the economy. So I think you're going to get the low print on earnings with the upcoming earnings in the next few weeks. And I think the economy 6 to 9 months from now is going to be just fine.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything you're worried about? Is there anything you lose sleep over right now when it comes to the markets or to the economy?
I'm worried about the presidential elections. Although I saw a study today from Helmut Norposh, which is correctly predicted 24 of the last 26 presidential elections and who was going to win. And he pegged the chance of his model, I should say, pegged the chance of Trump being reelected at 91%. If Joe Biden chooses Elizabeth Warren as his vice president running mate, and they get elected, I don't think it's going to be good for the economy, and I don't think it's going to be particularly good for the stock market. So that worries me, the upcoming presidential election.
Well, okay, so you're hoping for Trump, obviously. Jeff, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me and to take the time to explain to us what you think and why you think that.
It's my pleasure. You did great. You did a great job.
Oh, thank you so much. Jeff, have a good day. Es ist wieder an der Zeit für einen kurzen Blick auf mein New York. Trump ist gerade sauer auf die New Yorker. Sie haben ausgerechnet vor einem seiner Gebäude, dem Trump Tower, ein großes gelbes Black Lives Matter auf die Straße gepinselt. Nicht irgendeine Straße. Die beste Straße New Yorks, twittert Trump. Die Fifth Avenue, die Luxus-Einkaufsstraße für gut Betuchte. Die war gesperrt für die Malarbeiten, die genehmigt wurden von Bürgermeister Bill de Blasio. Der antwortete auf Trumps Tweet, die Fifth Avenue sei, wie so vieles andere, von Schwarzen gebaut worden. Es sei an der Zeit, sie zu würdigen. Der nächste Streitpunkt sind die Schulen. Trump will die trotz nach wie vor hoher Infektionszahlen wieder öffnen im Herbst.
We want to reopen the schools. Everybody wants it. The moms want it. The dads want it. The kids want it. It's time to do it.
No, not yet, sagt Bill de Blasio. Er will die öffentlichen Schulen im September nur teilweise öffnen, für maximal 3 Tage pro Woche. Rückendeckung hat er von Andrew Cuomo, dem Governor von New York State.
This is getting a little old, as far as I'm concerned. And I heard what the president said on schools, but this has been there, done that, right? School reopenings are a state decision, period. It's not up to the president of the United States. There is something called the Constitution that guides government power. And then there are a series of laws that are based on that Constitution. And the president does not have the authority to open schools. We will open the schools if it is safe to open the schools.
Das war's von mir für diese Ausgabe. Wenn Sie Anregungen, Wünsche oder Feedback haben, schreiben Sie mir wie immer gerne eine E-Mail an wallstreetweekly@mediapioneer.com. Bis nächsten Montag. Ich wünsche Ihnen eine erfolgreiche Woche. Aus New York von ganzem Herzen, Ihre Sophie Schimanski.